What can purge my heart of the song and the sadness? What can purge my heart but the song of the sadness? What can purge my heart of the sadness of the song? Do not speak of sorrow with dust in her hair or bits of dust in eyes. A chance wind blows there. The sorrow that I speak of is dusted with despair. Voice of muted trumpet, cold brass in warm air, bitter television blurred by sound that shimmers where. A song for Billie Holiday by Langston Hughes. I'm Joe Lee, and you're listening to the 315.
And I'm Kevin Kloss. April is National Poetry Month and Jazz Appreciation Month. And while those two are not connected in any official way, poets like Langston Hughes have celebrated jazz in poetry and prose since the dawn of jazz.
Beginning with the birth of blues and jazz at the start of the 20th century, jazz poetry is and can be seen as a thread that runs through the Harlem Renaissance, the Beat Movement, and the Black Arts Movement. But is it still vibrant today?
We thought it fitting to sit and chat about it and celebrate with some of Syracuse's poets. We welcome Georgia Popoff, workshop coordinator at the YMCA's Downtown Writers Center, and Phil Memmer, executive director of the arts branch of the YMCA. Thanks for joining us today.
Hello.
Good to be here.
How does it feel to have a month that celebrates poets and poetry?
It's sort of interesting. You know, it's fantastic that it gets so much more attention for the art form during this focused period of time in the year. But I always joke with people that at the Downtown Writers Center at the Y, it's always Poetry Month. You know, we don't wait for April to roll around. We have great events all year. So it means we're a little busier. A lot of poets I know, you know, if they're going to have readings booked, it's in April. But I think it's wonderful that there's some time set aside where there's more public attention for the art.
There's a lot in education that happens, too, especially in K-12 schools where teachers will be more conscious of it. And bookstores like Barnes & Noble do a big thing. We get to see the evidence that people do pay attention at least a little bit, and we get to advocate for our art. But like Phil said, we're doing that 24/7 anyway.
Historically, poets have sung the praises, told stories, celebrated jazz musicians, legendary musicians, everyone from Charlie Parker to Billie Holiday to John Coltrane, Miles Davis, Duke Ellington. I mean, almost anyone you can name who is a titan of jazz has been celebrated in a poem. And so we know that those two have sort of operated in the same spaces, hung out in the same spaces, celebrated in the same spaces. But there is a thing that's considered jazz poetry, right?
Oh, yeah. I think there's a long tradition, as you mentioned, of poets extolling the virtues of particular musicians in their work. I think there are a lot of poets also who are very influenced specifically by jazz techniques, you know, that they are they look at jazz and the way the line of measure works in jazz or maybe for a particular jazz musician and try to think about how that might work in the way they work with language. You know, many, many poets over the years I know have experimented with things like that, some maybe more obviously than others. There are lots of poems who have written very eloquently about jazz and jazz musicians in much more traditional sorts of forms, you know, where you wouldn't know from maybe the music of the language that they were influenced by jazz, but certainly the subject matter is jazz.
I think of people like Amiri Baraka, Sterling Brown, Hayden Carruth, Sonia Sanchez, poets like that. But even Langston Hughes, going back to the Harlem Renaissance, music was in his poetry. I mean, he wrote things like bebop, bebop, doobop, doobam, things. You know, he just used those rhythms to express his poetry. And so it's no wonder that these two are celebrated in the same month because there is such a relationship.
You guys are both active in the poetry scene here in Syracuse, so we kind of alluded to the fact that both jazz artists and poets are influenced by the other one. Is there any musical artists that either one of you are influenced by, whether that's jazz or a different genre completely?
Music is just part of the thread of my life, the background of my life. When I was a kid, my dad always played Dixieland and big band. He was really into swing. So that was an early influence. And then I got my first radio when I was five. And I've been listening to music ever since. So, but I'm some of the people that I think within the jazz community that make me think a lot about poetry. I was really on a Stefan Harris buzz for a while, especially after he did the Grand Unification Theory, where he was commissioned to write a suite based on physics, like, and then render it in jazz vibraphone. And I was just I had that on repeat for about 2 weeks, and I know it would influence what I was working on.
I don't write to music, and I don't really think of music as being something that informs my work in any really direct way. The one thing I do that has been very important to me, especially over the past few years, is I'll listen to music right before I write, you know, directly before I sit down, just to change my headspace, you know, to get myself into a particular mood, to shut out some of the outside world before I sit down to get to work. I found that to actually be pretty crucial. But what that music might be on any given day changes, you know. It might be jazz, it might be blues, it might be gothic industrial or techno or ambient music. It could be any number of things.
So we just sort of talked about the musicians that inspire you guys. What about other poets? Is there any poets out there that when you think of your work, you can see how being exposed to them really influenced what you did?
There's so many. My favorite poet probably of all time is Robert Frost, who I fell in love with in college. And there's something about the way that he, you know, his public image is, you know, the good gray New England poet writing about nature and stuff. And the real Robert Frost is terrifying. And I just love that split in his work. But, you know, the first poets I discovered as a young person just getting interested in writing were Lucille Clifton, who was very heavily influenced by jazz. Stanley Kunitz, also a poet who was influenced quite a bit by jazz. We just had a spectacular reading the other night from a poet named Sean Thomas Doherty, who actually went to SU many years ago and now lives out in Erie. So many great writers out there right now.
When I was a young poet, I discovered William Blake. I discovered the tiger in one of my mother's women's magazines. I went running into her, "Mom, I love this poem." No idea that he'd been dead for 500 years. And she was, "You like that poem?" Ah, she was an artist, so she kind of liked that. And as a young poet, there was the Imagist poets of William Carlos Williams and Marianne Moore, and then E.E. Cummings in high school. They're like, "Whoa, you can really mess with the page. You're allowed to do that." Ada Limone, who was here for the Carver series in the fall, has really brightened me a great deal. And I spent a couple of years very immersed in the work of Gwendolyn Brooks, working on an anthology project for I was editing for Haymarket Books to celebrate her centennial last year, where she has a lot of characters who float through that jazz world throughout her poems. And just every poem is a lesson on how to write.
Are we coming out? Are there things going on in our community today celebrating poetry? I know you said for you guys it's a year-round event, but I think back to the days when we had places like Happy Endings, when there was a Borders here that had open mics. Are we coming out as a community to still enjoy and celebrate, or was that a fad? What's going on the poetry scene as it relates to the average fan?
Well, certainly the Downtown Writers Center Writers Series, where we've got Phil has an incredible knack for bringing people to town who are the cutting edge or really well established, and very often he'll hire them for a reading, and then all of a sudden he'll say, "Oh, guess who just won the Pulitzer? Or guess who just won the National Book Award?" So we tend to take advantage of their less than famous stances. But we have everything from local writers who are publishing to award-winning poets on our reading series, and we have a couple of open mics a year. There are some smaller open mics. There's a group called the Palace Poetry Group that I believe is back at the new Jamesville Library. They're on the first Thursday of every month. There's a woman named April Hawthorne who does a monthly or quarterly called Naked Poetry, and that does not imply that you show up naked, but your work has to be pretty naked. And there may be some other things that are happening. Certainly Verbal Blend on campus. Mm-hmm. Cedric Bolton has done such a great job of developing a poetry and spoken word community here on campus. There may be other things like that, but it's not quite like it was in the 90s and early 2000s. There weren't as many ongoing open mics. Can you think of anything else, Phil?
I think you got most of them. There are other places that do the occasional literary event. Point of Contact down in the SU Warehouse building does La Casita occasionally. So there's quite a lot going on. Actually, I think it's worth saying that there's never really been a better time for poetry than now. And it's a growing art form. There are more books of poems being published every year. I would say in general, there's more places where you can go hear readings and things, whether that's true in Syracuse or not. But in general, I think it is. There's, of course, an explosion of places online for poetry. It's really an astonishing time for the art.
Since computerization and personal computers and then the way digital media is such, it's easier, I think, to generate books. So I think more indie small presses are showing up in much the same way that that's happened with music, that a lot of individuals are saying, hey, I want to start a press. Now, it can mean that some of it is good and some of it isn't quite as much. But the opportunity to get into the big publishers, I mean, in the big publishing houses, there's only five entities that own all of the major publishing in America. But then there's this whole independent publishing community. Tiger Bark Press, Phil is associate editor of Tiger Bark Press. And, you know, that's growing exponentially, actually, every
yes.
year. There's more and more that you have to do. But, you know, it's a lot of small journals that aren't embedded in universities. So I think we see that. What that also does is a lot of people don't understand the economy behind that with either musicians or with writers. Is when you go to see them read or you go to see them perform, when they have their merch table up, invest in that. Don't buy it online at Amazon. Don't buy it on any of the other venues. Or if you're going to buy it, go to the publisher and buy it online rather than buying it through a third party. Because that way it directly goes to the press and the artist or the label and the artist. And there's a direct correlation in profit margin for the artist being compensated and the venue that's promoting them through their work being compensated. People should think about that a little bit.
So, guys, we've spent some time now just kind of talking about what influences you have in your work and the poetry here in Syracuse. I think it's a good time to hear some actual poetry, and each of you has a poem you're going to perform for us. So, Georgia, why don't we start with you?
Sure, I'd love to. This is from my second book, The Doom Weaver, which was published by Main Street Rag Publishers in Charlotte, North Carolina. This poem was one that I originally crafted for its impact, and what I discovered about it was also for its humor. As a rule, I don't kill insects. This morning I sat in the quiet sun before the cicada had risen. A gnat crash-landed in my cup, drew a drop thick with cream, a speck hoping its wings would catch their breath. Yesterday I saved two bumblebees and a wasp drowning in the kiddie pool. The fat bumblebees must have grown greedy with pollen, their underbellies too delirious to fly straight. I have no explanation for the sleek wasp going so far off course. One of the bees was spinning in terror. I touched a rock to water. He clung like algae as I placed him in the grass and sweet clover. This repeated until all three perched on blades cleared of dew. Narrow wings glistened like amber. I will kill cockroaches. I recognize the audacity of every person who has hurt me as I raise my shoe.
Isn't that true of most of us?
Yeah.
I mean, we won't kill a butterfly, but
yeah.
we'll stomp the mess out of a cockroach. Phil, what do you have?
Sure. I have a poem called The God of Sky. It is from a book that's coming out next year from Lost Horse Press. And it's a book called Pantheon, which is a collection of poems all written in the voices of various imagined god characters. So this one is The God of Sky. Because you have always been a model passenger, pretending to watch the pre-flight safety instructions, always willing and able to perform the duties required of those in exit row seats. I leapt into action and removed you from your crashing plane. It was a small thing, the exit door already blown away by the smuggled device, your lap belt unfastened, despite the fact your only sin, the fastened seatbelt sign, was clearly lit. I forgave you and brought you here, the freezing air of 20,000 feet. Whether you're better off than those inside is yours to say. I'm not the god of safety or soft landings. Those still panicking in the doomed fuselage have, along with oxygen masks and seat cushion flotation devices, the same time left that you do, more or less. And they have each other screaming. You have nothing but falling and the wind your falling makes. You're shaking, yes, but you have the horizon at sunset and the Earth's curve. And I will stay however long it takes you to flurry through me, if that's all right. I wish, how I wish I could be the god of flight or out of thin air parachutes or even the god of death so I could end this. I'm not. There is no god of death or parachutes or flight. Just sky. I hope it's a comfort to know that I am with you. I hope it's a comfort to know you're almost flying.
Phil, for me in that poem, the twists and turns really come alive hearing it out loud from you.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just curious, sort of, when you're writing, do you think of impact more in terms of words that will be read off a page? Or like when someone's going to hear this performed, this is where it's really going to come to life for them. Is there a difference?
So I think of... I think of poems, and not everyone thinks of poems this way, but I certainly do. I think of the page as both an artifact in itself, but also instructions for performance. You know, that the page should dictate to you how it's going to be read out loud. And for me, I read my work out loud obsessively while I'm writing it. I couldn't tell you how many times I've finished a poem and knew I was pretty much done with the poem and couldn't actually tell you what it meant, but it sounded right. You know, just the music of the words was where I wanted. And sometimes you have to go back and, you know, make sure you actually make sense, you know, and that you've not missed any important parts of a story or something like that. But for me, that verbal component of it is crucial.
Guys, thanks for coming in. We appreciate just all the perspective you're able to add today. For people who like what they heard, where can they find some more of your work?
Well, my most recent book is called Psalter, the Agnostic's Book of Common Curiosities. It's available at Syracuse University Bookstore. It's available online at Tiger Bark Press. I usually have a copy in my pocket. My other book that I read from today is The Doom Weaver, and that is available from Main Street Rag. And I think it may be in some of the bookstores in town.
Great. And my most recent books can be found online at www.losthorsepress.org or through your favorite online vendor.
And that's going to do it for another edition of the 315. Thanks for taking some time to celebrate National Poetry Month with us. You can connect with us on Facebook at the 315CNY. And don't forget to subscribe in Apple Podcasts for automatic delivery of new episodes. And if you do subscribe through Apple Podcasts, would you take just a few moments to rate and review the podcast? It helps us get this show in front of more Central New York listeners. For Joe Lee, I'm Kevin Kloss. Until next time.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised.